Hey you, how's it going? My name is Ruby Price and you are listening to the 12th ever episode of Fresh From The Scene. This is going to be a rather short intro compared to last week because last week's intro was a bit of a long one, but I did have a lot to say, so swings and roundabouts, innit? Yeah, cool. So last week's interview was obviously with Alex Tracy and it took place before Hang The DJ. This week's interview took place immediately the day after Hang The DJ. I was not really awake. And I was slightly hungover. That might be a bit of news to some people. This one was obviously recorded on location. We recorded it in Bar Maroc. Thank you very much to Bar Maroc for hosting us. It was very much appreciated. And thank you very much to Storm Kiara for, you know, sort of stranding Liam in Huddersfield so that we could record for basically as long as we needed to. Isn't the British weather lovely? It's really not. Obviously, before this podcast does get started, I'm contractually obliged to mention our social media. If you haven't followed Fresh From The Scene on Twitter, you can find us at FFTSCENE, FFTScene. That's on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Rubes, R-U-U-B-E-Z. Instagram at Rubes001. It really annoys me that they are different, but you know, I guess we can't have everything in life, can we? That's social media. Make sure that if you do enjoy this podcast, you give it a share on those platforms. You know, you might get a cheeky retweet. You might get a cheeky shout out in the future because people like shout outs. People like being recognized for giving a shit. So if you enjoy it, share on social media. If you enjoy it even more than just worthy of a share, leave a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to it on. Anyway, without further ado, here's an interview with Liam James Wood, organiser of Hang The DJ.
You're listening to Fresh From The Scene with your host, Ruby Price.
Welcome to Fresh From The Scene. Today's guest is everyone's favourite promoter, Liam Wood.
That's a big title. Thanks for that. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, you know. Like, as soon as I started this podcast, I was like, who can I speak to? Liam.
You're flattering me now. But yeah, no, I mean, on the flip side, as soon as I heard about the podcast, I was like, I'd love to be involved with it. So, again, thanks for having me.
Yeah, like, obviously we're both a little bit, you know, worse for wear because it was Hang The DJ last night.
Yeah, definitely. It was a good night. You know, in all honesty, I went to bed a lot earlier than I planned to. So it could be a different story, but no, it's, you know, there's also the meltdown currently of all the trains, so that's fun.
Yeah.
All the trains being cancelled and now I've got to stay here for another night. I make it sound like a chore. I'm really excited to be here for another night, but kind of figuring out how to deal with that situation.
Yeah.
But what a better way to numb the pain than have a chat with you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're both probably very hungover.
Yeah, I mean, the beer in my hand says it all, hair of the dog, etc. Yeah.
I mean, I'm already feeling a little bit better after a couple of sips. Anyway.
Sip of Jack and Coke, that's jobs are good in. That's what you need.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, how was Hang The DJ last night for you? You know, it's obviously for being me. Your baby.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was incredible. It was, as a fan, like as somebody going to a gig, it was incredible. I said to each and every band we played last night, and all of them I've seen play a million times, that was the best I've ever seen you play. And so many people in the crowd said the same thing. The bands themselves had said, like, you know, that was the best. I think that was the best show we've ever played, which is extremely exciting to be to play a part in that and to see that energy and feel that energy in a room. As a promoter, as you know me, it was also an incredible experience. But it was just so gratifying in terms of, as you said, Hang The DJ is my baby. It's kind of this. It's this thing that I start, like, before, you know, the rest of the music industry stuff that I do was, like, on the horizon. Like, before it even was an idea in my head, Hang The DJ was the beginning of all of that. So, to go from, you know, having to message, like, hundreds of people on Facebook being like, oh, please come to my gig. And, you know, a public apology to all the people I've annoyed over the years with that sort of behaviour. But all the people that I've, you know, had to bug and, you know, all the kind of favours I've had to pull and all the mistakes I've made. And, you know, all of that being said, that was the whole point of it. It was an incubator for me to make those mistakes and to learn those lessons. But anyway, but after all of that, to 2 years after finishing it, throw a night and just kind of let it do its thing and see what happens and see that explosive reaction from the bands, from all the people excited to come and come down. People like yourself as well, who, you know, reacted so like quickly and were like, I'm down, let's go. It was extremely gratifying. And at the same time, as just a person there, I got to see loads of people I've not seen in a long time. So it ticked every box it could do.
Mm. It felt very much like a return to, you know, I don't want to use the phrase the good old days, but the good old days.
No, for sure. I think what's weird, and I think it's just part of life, is I think it's part of the uni experience. The majority of the people in that room, the bands, myself, probably yourself as well, like all the people in the room, we, having gone to uni with each other, have seen each other turn from students is the probably best way of wording it. Infer from that what you want, and now we're actually adults and we're all kind of starting to do stuff, and the bands have all developed like so incredibly well. Like, again, watching them and seeing Courtyards, Mahatma, Charlie, Alex, having seen them, like, I went to one of Courtyard's first shows, I went to Mahatma's first show, I went to Alex's first, I mean, I managed Alex for 2 years. To see that development and that growth from a band is exciting. And the same thing goes for all the people who were there, like bumping into people I've not seen in years. Mm. And just, my favourite part was just getting to chat to people and catch up. And, you know, there's people I've not seen in years who, the last time I saw them, their head was probably down the toilet in Camel throwing up or something. And I'm like, oh, what are you up to now? And they're like, oh, I work in IT, I'm like a manager, and like, you know, I'm on a decent wage, I've just bought a house, I've got a girlfriend, everything's going really well. And that just brings me so much joy to see all those people doing so well and doing stuff that they love. Mm. Like, not even, you know, I say they're saying, oh yeah, I'm on a decent wage, that's not what it comes down to. And that's the thing, I always kind of say, okay, cool, but like, are you happy? Like, how's life? Like, not what are you doing? Like, you're not your career, like, how are you in general? But yeah, sorry, I'm dwiddling around a few different points there. It was great. It was amazing. Yeah. Really, really good night for so many different reasons.
Mm. I definitely agree with you about like some of the acts like having the best set that they've ever probably done.
Yeah.
Because I was watching Alex and thinking, like, obviously I thought Alex was good before. I was like, when did Alex get this good? Like,
yeah.
You know.
Obviously, Alex specifically, because as I'm, you know, Alex is one of my best friends for starters, and I worked with him on a professional level, managed him for 2 years, and one of the things with Alex specifically is that it was always such a mission for me, because he is an incredible artist, he's an incredible songwriter, he's an incredible, you know, just person, like, and I saw that potential in him and wanted to push him as hard as I could to become the performer that he's supposed to be. So to hear you say that, and also to have seen that show, and like when I was watching Alex last night, I stood at the back of the room and was like, I'm so proud of what we managed to achieve, like, all, not even just me and him, like the band as well, like Bamba, B and all of them. I'm really proud of what we've achieved, where those guys have managed to get to.
You've obviously mentioned Hang the DJ was your baby, like, what led to Hang the DJ?
How did Hang the DJ start? Well, there's a few different versions of the story, depending on who I'm talking to. All of them true, but some of them shedding light on certain parts and some of them shadowing other parts. But essentially, the bare bones of the story is, after my first year of uni, kind of tried to get out of the student lifestyle a bit more and try and grow up a bit and try and do something and do something interesting. And at the same time, I was really starting to fall in love with the town of Huddersfield, and that love comes from a place of, again, like, as I said with Alex, like, just seeing the potential that could be there. And, you know, that's not saying that it's not already doing incredible things. It is. But I just saw this kind of gap where there are all these incredible bands. And obviously, Parish is doing incredible stuff. Obviously, you know, Small Seeds, etc. was all doing really good stuff. But I just was like, there's a lack of a community here. Mm. So I just moved from Birmingham, and it was just after the wave of, like, the B-Town scene of Peace, Swim Deep, Jaws, and that energy, like, and that community where you just saw all these bands at each other's shows, and all the promoters knew each other, and all the fans knew each other. Just, I felt like Huddersfield was missing that a little bit. And that isn't me trying to be a martyr and be like, oh, well, I'm going to create this community. But I was like, I want to do something that's aiming to fuel that. Mm. And that's what Hang the DJ's mission always was. The whole point was, I'm going to start this club night, and I'm going to, you know, the whole point is it's going to be about the bands, and it's going to be about building the bands like themselves, but also it's going to be about the people there. Like, the whole point of it, as you've probably seen from every time I have a DJ, it's about breaking that boundary between the stage and the audience. And, you know, very dramatic examples being when I always get everybody on stage for a song or two when I'm playing. But on more of a metaphorical sense, it's about once Mahatma Raindrop finishes a gig, they don't pack up their stuff and go. They hang around, they talk to all the people there. You know, we all hang around afterwards and we have a big party. That's the whole thing, is it's a party.
Yeah.
To see, again, going back to last night, it's really exciting to have kind of seen that blossom. But yeah, that's kind of how it started, with that ambition to try and do that. But on a more physical sense, how it started is I then essentially just started sending out loads of messages to bands and venues. I'd been in bands myself, so I had a kind of rough idea of how it all worked. And I think at that point I'd promoted a couple random shows like at Parish. But it was finally like, I'm going to start a specific club night here. I've said the story a billion times, but I almost cancelled it the night before, the first one, because I was so scared that no one would turn up.
Yeah.
Because it was so... Because I, as I said, like, I'd messaged everyone, like, I'd spoken to everyone I'd ever met and been like, come to this club night. Like, I'd printed posters, I'd printed flyers, you know, I'd really, really, really pushed it. And the advance tickets just didn't do well, which I've now figured out as a promoter that that's kind of how it works for student club nights. But at the time I was like, I'm gonna lose hundreds of pounds. I'm also, which I didn't have, so I'm going to be hundreds of pounds in debt. And at the same time, I'm going to embarrass myself. Like, I'm just going to look like a tit. But luckily, some people convinced me to go ahead with it. And I remember very, very vividly setting up and being on the brink of an anxious breakdown. And I went to pop out the front to just see if anyone was starting to, you know, turn up. And there was a queue. People I didn't even know. That was the best thing. It wasn't, there was mates there as well, obviously, but that what really hit home was the fact that loads of people, like 75% of the people there, I'd never met them. They had no idea who I was, I had no idea who they were. They just heard about what the night was, and what it was trying to do. And yeah, it was just amazing to have really thought, you know, Huddersfield could do with something like this. And Huddersfield replied by going, yeah, we agree.
Mm.
I think we do as well. So, yeah, no, that's how it started and then went from there.
Yeah. So, you know, like, obviously you left Huddersfield about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
You know, after graduating uni and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what's been happening since then? You know, like, I think I saw you were part of a team that won a Brit Award.
Yeah. So, I went back to Warner. So, I left Huddersfield for my placement year in 2016 for a year to work at Warner, which was incredible. Then I came back here for a year, which was a really weird experience, but it was a really, I keep saying the word gratifying, but it was a really gratifying experience to kind of come home almost to where it all started for me. And, you know, obviously I met my girlfriend, I made loads of new friends, I like some really good stuff happened in that year, which I love. Like, a lot of people still say to me now, like, do you regret even going back to uni considering your degree didn't really help you that much? I got so much out of it on a personal level. But yeah, so when I left properly, went back to Warner, worked there for a few months, wasn't really gelling in the way I wanted it to. Ended up getting a job at a digital marketing agency called Behook Digital, which is where I work now. We essentially do social media and creative campaigns for various artists, some brands as well. And yeah, that includes Tom Walker, who we managed to push to win a Brit Award. So obviously the Brits isn't actually voted by the fans, apart from one award, which they've now scrapped. So we're actually the last team to have ever won that award, incredibly. But it was the fan-voted, like, British breakthrough. So that was voted for by the fans who they think deserves to win it. And we did a whole creative campaign. You know, I'm nowhere near going to take full credit. It was mainly Matt, who's my manager. Tom Walker was his client. He identified that Tom was the only Scottish person nominated in the Brits. So we did this whole campaign around, like, vote for Scotland. A vote for Tom is a vote for Scotland. And it was almost like a semi-ironic Scottish independence political campaign. And Tom and Matt with him went and did a tour of Scotland with Tom performing, like, gigs with a bagpipe group all around like supermarkets and stuff like that, which apparently worked because we won it, which was amazing. I mean, this is a year ago now because the Brits is next week for this year, but that was incredible. And you know, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you it's all about the awards and stuff, like it's not really about that, but to be recognized on a national level, like I've sat and watched the Brits since I was a kid, like that. So to have gone there and been like, holy crap, we won a Brit Award, like oof, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and I don't think that feeling ever go. I mean, you know, that's just the one campaign. We've worked on various campaigns that have had great success, not just in, you know, number one albums and stuff like that, which is, I'm not going to underplay it, that's great, like I'm buzzed about that sort of thing, but even just making a difference to fans' lives and all those sort of things, and building a community around a band, and just, you know, revitalizing people's careers. Like, we worked with Rick Astley, who, you know, is essentially was known for being a meme, but then came back and did an incredible album campaign and is now actually seen as a credible musician again. Like, his best mates are Dave Grohl and they perform together a lot. So yeah, doing some incredible stuff with Be Hooked. Alongside that, I run a few different club nights around the country, mainly with Dork magazine, which again is my favourite magazine in the world. I'm really, really lucky to work with them. And then the DJing stuff has been picking up more and more. As of last summer, I kind of decided to start taking it a lot more seriously, and have managed to do some exciting stuff. Some more exciting stuff coming up, and there's even more exciting stuff that I've not even told anyone about yet, which is very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really exciting. Just a lot of excitement.
Yeah, I'm kind of I'm kind of running out of energy from being excited so much.
Obviously, on the DJ stuff as well. Like, I think you said yesterday or the day before, it's been like a year since you were like with Propaganda and stuff.
Yeah. So Propaganda, although it's kind of you know, got a reputation of being like very Mr. Bright, you know, it's not necessarily the coolest night. Like, it's not like this underground indie night. Like, it's very much you're going for the bangers, and it's been around for like 15 years, so you know, some people's parents probably went, and like I know of it because all my older cousins used to go, but because of that was always like, that is the indie guitar music club night. And it's kind of what I based the model for Hang the DJ on quite a lot. So when I started to kind of take DJing a bit more seriously, I really, really was on a mission to start working with Propaganda. And then now that has turned into, like, Dan, the guy who started and ran it, is like a good mate of mine, and I play for them like once or twice a month. And over the course of a year, I've gone from playing that first show with them to like DJing with Charlie Simpson, and all sorts of crazy stuff, and DJing all over the country with them, which again is just an incredible experience to see that progress from being a kid watching my cousins go out to this club night, and like, you know, it's a big club night, like thousands of people go every single week. To go from that to now I'm in the latest promo video, like the latest promo video for that club night that is about to get released. It was filmed on night I was DJing, so I'm like front and center in the new promotional video for a club night that I used to like be excited to go, like be looking forward to even being allowed to go to it, never mind being the person on stage jumping around to the Fratellis. So here we are.
And obviously as well, like you were an actual like listed artist at like Reading and stuff, you know, but you didn't imagine that.
Honestly, I kind of just, you know, there's no part of me that takes any of it for granted, but at the same time I think I've come to terms with just like, it's all crazy. Like, I'm just going with the flow at this point. Like, I love looking around at all the crazy stuff we're doing, but it's like, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said something to me the once where it's like, always look at where you were 3 years ago, and if you see that crazy difference, like, think of where you're going to be 3 years from now. Like, what? So 3 years ago, I'd have been 20. That would have been just before I would have just started interning at Warner around that time. So to go from that to where I am now, If that progression carries on, or even more, or even if it was slightly less, like, God knows what's happening. Or maybe I'll mess up. Who knows? Stay tuned.
Yeah, well, great. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. We definitely will.
So obviously, as well, you know, like, you, putting it bluntly, were like probably a main component of Huddersfield's music scene over the last like 2 years.
Right.
You know, like, how is that different now? Like, down in London, you know, because obviously London is a completely different circuit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, you know, you got you. You go from being a goldfish in a goldfish bowl to a little goldfish in the ocean. But I'm really lucky to have some really good pals around me. Like, some of the people that I get to work with, some of the people that I get to call friends are really integral to the music scene there. And I've really worked my ass off to kind of to try and do the same thing I've tried to do, that I tried to do here, and kind of pick that up and take it down. Like, obviously, I've just announced this, like, headline LJW house party show in March, which I'm really excited for, and that's going to be the start of a whole new thing. And what I said earlier about how Hang the DJ was essentially an incubator for me to make mistakes and learn, that's kind of what the past, well, 23 years has been, just making mistakes and learning. And it's all been to eventually, you know, hopefully do my own thing with my name and, you know, my face slapped on it from, you know, I guess it sounds really egotistical, but, you know, it's just, I've wanted to do something that's my name front and centre eventually. And it's kind of quite scary to be at this point now where I'm like, cool, like, this has all come to a culmination now, and here we go. This is me. So, yeah, London is great. Scene is great. Lucky to be a little bit involved with it. Hopefully more and more as time goes by.
Yeah, because obviously as well, like, what you were just saying about, you know, like, it being you, like, your name thing, it's like, you're seeing posters, on, well, digital posters these days, like, you know, being like, plus DJ set from Liam James Ward, and it's like, you know, your name's there, and you're being there, like, listed as something, a reason for people to go. You know,
that's something that's crazy in itself. Like, so I started working with my agent, a guy called Sam Tucker, who's also one of my closest friends, and one of the main things we spoke about was getting it to basically do exactly what you just said, as in, for my name to be worth tickets, in terms of, like, when a band gets put on a bill, like, realistically from a promoter's point, they're there to, you know, be another reason for people to buy tickets to come. So it's kind of a mission right now to build it to a point where my name goes on a poster, and then that tips people over the edge into buying tickets just to something. Obviously, you know, that's not the be-all and end-all. The be-all and end-all is a lot more holistic than getting people to buy stuff. But right now, from a business-orientated point, that's the kind of thing we're trying to build.
So do you prefer, like, because we mentioned this last night when we were talking before behind the DJ sets, like, you know, oh, it's probably going to be a set list of bangers rather than, like, the, you know, underground indie stuff. Like, which kind of stuff do you prefer? Do you like the ones where you can play, you know, like Black Parade and people are going to go crazy? Or do you like the ones where it's like, oh, who the fuck are this band? I've never heard of them. This is great.
Which do I prefer? That's actually a really good question, which sounds like an obvious one, but I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. I love them both for very different reasons. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I only ever listen to, like, really cool underground indie hipster bands that no one's heard of. I love whacking on a bit of the Killers and the Fratellis on my playlist. The thing is, when you play the bangers and you play the big tunes, and when you play the club, when you play the club nights that no one's interested in hearing, you know, so, like, in finding new music, they just want to have a dance and have a sing-along. You can have a bit more fun with it. Well, you saw last night, like, it's a lot more of dancing around. It's a lot more of mic control, like, getting people, like, involved and speaking to the crowd and that sort of thing. You can concentrate on that a bit more. Whereas on the flip side, when you're kind of doing the kind of, you know, vinyl DJ sets in some craft brewery down the back street of, like, Hackney or something, it's cool in a different way, because you kind of get to offer the crowd a part of, like, who you are, like, truly who you are, which sounds a bit pretentious, but I mean, as in, you're essentially saying, this is the music that I'm about, as in, this is what my name means. Like, this is, like, as a band, you gotta view it a bit like a band, I guess. Like, say, for example, with Mahatma Raindrop, when they put a set list together and they play a set, they're saying, this is what Mahatma Raindrop sounds like. This is who we are. This is what we spend hours a week in a studio, rehearsal room, creating, and this is what comes out of us. Although DJing isn't necessarily with music you've made, you are choosing from billions of songs what songs you want to represent you and represent your name. So when you do a good job with that, and people come over and they're like, oh, I've not heard this song in a long time, or, you know, who's this band? Like, this is amazing. Or, you know, maybe you see people Shazamming something in the crowd. It's not necessarily gratifying because it's like, haha, I know this band and you don't. It's gratifying because it's like, oh, people are enjoying something that represents who I am and something that I've worked on, because that side of things, the DJing element there, is sourcing more music, is going out and finding new, fresh, exciting music. So when that effort comes to people enjoying it and wanting to find out more and go on that own journey themselves, you know, that's great. That's why we do it.
Yeah. So you were just making a really good point about, like, you know, things, you know, this, a song representing you and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, what would what song do you think is the ultimate representation of Liam Ward?
What is the ultimate representation of Liam Ward? Jesus, Ruby.
It's allowed to change in like 3 weeks.
Of course. Yeah. No, I mean, to be honest with you, mate, it probably changes from minute to minute. But you know what? Absolutely going on the record, Mr. Brightside by The Killers. Mr. Brightside. And I don't mean that as in like, that sounds very live, laugh, love. It sounds very like basic teenage white girl, I know. But that's the point. As in, I don't care if you think I'm cool or not. Like, at the end of the day, like, I am self-secured enough and I'm happy with what I'm doing. And that's a thing in itself with DJing, is coming to terms with the fact that there's going to be people in the crowd who think you're crap. There's going to be people in the crowd who hate the music you're playing. There were people last night coming on stage and requesting, like, people I didn't know, requesting, like, some really niche band. And I was just like, you don't get what this is. Like, come and see me on another show, maybe. But the reason I'm saying Mr. Brightside is because everyone pretends not to like it. But some of the coolest people I know will belt that out at a house party or on a night out. And I think the people who shy away from the happy-go-lucky tunes because they're obvious or they're not cool enough, it comes from a place of insecurity, I think. I think they don't want to show that everyone loves Mr. Brightside. If you're pretending not to like it, that comes from a place of insecurity, of like, you don't think you're allowed to like it, you're worried what people will think if you say it. So the reason I'm saying that is to objectively say, I don't care if you think I'm cool. I'm happy with what I'm doing. And it's a jolly good tune to have a belt out to.
Oh, definitely. Like, I've heard many people say that Mr. Brightside is the Bohemian Rhapsody of our generation.
Well, it's like, hasn't it been in the Billboard Top 200 since release?
That's
like,
what I think.
I feel. Yeah. I think that's a thing. Like, I think it's only dropped out of... Don't 100% quote me on this, like, with the exact figures, but I'm pretty sure there's something like, since its release, it's only ever been out of the Billboard Top 200 for, like, 3 weeks in total or something like that, because it's just always there.
Yeah.
And that says it all. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, talking about how there's different DJ sets, I opened the show with Mr. Brightside last night. That's what you end a set with, but I opened it with that last night as a point of, you know, I've not played Huddersfield for 2 years. There's a lot of people there who don't know me, don't know what I'm about.
Yeah.
I played that song to basically, essentially, as a bit of a fuck you to the cool kids, to go, if you're not here for this kind of vibe, just leave, because you're not going to have a good time.
Yeah.
If you're belting it out right away, then cool, you're my kind of people.
You're going to have a really good 2 hours now.
Yeah, let's start high and go higher, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of where we went with it.
Yeah, exactly. I think from my perspective, like, if I was choosing a song to, you know, represent me, like, in that sense, it might probably be like, you know, Thank You for the Venom, Like I'm Corrupts, because it's like, you know, emo, punk, like, you know, just fast rock stuff, because, you know, that's me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, but that's not what's going to win a crowd over if you open
with
that.
Sure. I mean, going back to what we said about a DJ set is essentially what represents you. I think if you worry too much about what other people are going to want to hear, you lose sense of who you are as a DJ. I think, you know, there's obviously an element of, you got to know when the bright song goes where, like, to put the crowd in a certain position and form the night a bit. But if you're so focused on what the crowd want to hear, then you may as well just be any typical club DJ playing, you know, no offence, but playing Revs or playing Tokyo, or, you know, just like a standard, you know, going out to just a standard club night, you know. If you want to be the kind of DJ who's making your own name, this isn't coming from, you know, me being 10 years down the line and a super expert, I'm still learning as I go, I'm just getting started, but that's what I feel about that scenario, is you need to play what you think you should be playing and what you want to be playing at that point, because you are essentially bleeding out of the speakers who you are as a human being. And if people don't like that, that's fine. It's the same as a band. You're not gonna change, you know, if you were a band and you changed, you know, if you, well, for example, if you started making a really poppy record because it's gonna sell more, people call you a sellout.
Yeah,
it's the exact same thing with DJing in my eyes. There's nothing wrong with selling out if you want to do that, that's fine. But I just mean, as in, if you want to actually say something about who you are and, you know, make a credible statement or whatever, then it's the same thing as being a band. You've got to be true to who you are. You've got to be true to your sound. And if people don't like it, people don't like it. But hopefully there'll be a lot of people who do.
Definitely. I was once watching one of my friends DJ at Leeds Pride last year.
Right.
And we were just like talking behind the decks. I was like, oh, gay bars on that playlist, you should stick it on. And she's like, no, I think the irony would be lost on all those people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's definitely... Because there's a thing within itself of like finding... Like playing a song as a joke and then realizing that some people aren't going to get the joke.
Yeah. Particularly like, you know, Leeds Pride. Let's play gay bar.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It could almost come across a bit... it could come across wrong, I think, to some people.
It would have been funny, I think, but...
Oh, it'd be scenes. It'd be absolute scenes, no doubt.
But yeah, also just going back to what you're saying, you know, like bands like going more commercial, like,
yeah,
and being called sellouts, you know, like Panic at the Disco have clearly gone for more of what looks like their own sound.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're constantly like referred to as, you know, like selling out because it's not a fever you can't sweat out.
I mean, all of those bands have done that. Paramore, yeah. Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy. You know, there's the whole joke about how My Chem did it a bit too early.
Yeah.
Because when they released Danger Days, if Danger Days came out now, like a pop emo record, geez, it'd fly.
Exactly.
And look at that. Look how well the Panic, Fall Out Boy, and Paramore stuff does.
They get Billboard 100s.
Yeah, for sure. And even like Slipknot, like they went a bit poppy in the middle. Like, I think they're trying to get back to the older roots now. But the thing is, what you got to remember, and there's a good quote from Noel Gallagher. I don't remember the exact wording, but the premise of what it is when you write your first album, for example, with Oasis, you're some you know, working class lads from a council estate, and you know you're angry at the world and all these things. But then when it comes to album two, you're a millionaire playing to, playing to thousands of people every night. Like, you're not as angry anymore, and that's obvious. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, you like Paramore, Fall Out Boy. Paramore were what, like, you'll know better than I will, but I think they were like what, 17 when they released their first album,
like 16, 17.
So like they would have been angry at the world. They were post teen, like, you know, mid teen hormonal kids. So of course they'd be angry at the world. Whereas I think by the time you're like getting to 30, and you know, you've Hayley Williams has got her own, like, you know, hair dye brand and all these cool things going.
Yeah.
You're not going to be as angry anymore.
I'm really enjoying her solo stuff right now.
Like, yeah, me too. I am as well. I think it...
Different.
It is, but I think... Because what's interesting about Paramore is I've always been told that Hayley got signed as a solo act originally.
Yeah.
And they basically wanted it to be a pop act. But she, when she was a teenager, and she was like, fuck you, I'm going to do what I want. I want to be in a rock band.
Teenager in 2005.
Exactly.
Know, what do you go with?
Literally.
Guitars.
So the band kind of got made there. And they, I think, I've heard that apparently the label always expected the band to work for like an album or two. And then she, you know, and then she'd sell out per se. But it's interesting that Paramore's done so well. And, you know, she's done stuff. Well, she did that track with what, Zed, like Stay the Night, like years ago.
Yeah.
And I think when she did that, people thought, oh, maybe she's going to start going down this pop route.
Yeah, because she also did Airplanes with B.O.B.
Exactly, yeah, no, that's what I mean. So I think when she's done those odd tunes, I think I've always been told that's the sort of thing that she was originally supposed to do. Inverted commas on suppose.
Yes.
I just realised you can't see
this
my finger. You can't see my finger motions on a podcast. Yeah, now she seems to be getting into the poppier side of things, but still being true to her sound.
Mm.
You know, still being a little bit of an edge around the corner sort of thing.
It's identifiably Hayley Williams.
Yeah, literally, no. Absolutely.
Yeah, like, because that's always one of the things, like when an artist goes off and does the solo career, in inverted commas, you know, it's like, are they going to do something that's recognisable to what they were doing in the, you know, band, like you mentioned Noel Gallagher, you know, like who did Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. A lot of the stuff sounds like what early Oasis like demos sounded like,
cause
he obviously sung on those and stuff. But then you get people like Skrillex, you know,
went
off after being first to last, like, you know, did dubstep.
Yeah, I think that's part of being a musician as well, isn't it? I guess, like, you just want to make music, don't you? And like whatever, like using Skrillex as, for example, it wasn't a, you know, really big emo band, and then was like, I'm going to go do EDM and stuff now. And that's just, I think any musician would kill to have that position. Because, like, going back to Alex, like, Alex always used to send me demos, and I'm like, these are all so different. Like, these are completely different, like, genres of music. Which, unfortunately, sometimes you have to play the game a little bit and bring a bit of a united sound in the beginning to prove who you are. But I was like, dude, hold on to these. These are great tracks. You could release them later down the line. And hopefully you will, because they were good songs. Guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, when I was speaking to him last week,
mm-hmm.
he was saying that, like, back when they were at Par Street Studios, you know, like, they recorded stuff which is going to be coming, you know, still, like, in the future, and that was back in 2018.
Yeah. That, again, that's part of being a musician. Like, you know, you record an album and then by the time it comes out, you recorded it 2 years ago. So you're already on two albums down from there. Mm. And I think from my own experience, like, people are normally bored of it by the time it comes out, which is why promo is normally very uninteresting, because you're normally a very different person. You got to think from writing to, like, producing to recording to marketing to releasing, like, you're probably you're in a completely different life by that time.
Mm.
So it must be really, really annoying to promo a record you're not even feeling so much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, McFly scrapped like two records in the space of them like doing the McFly McBusted and then coming back and doing McFly again,
right?
Because they just didn't feel like, you know,
that makes sense,
it was their stuff anymore.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
I mean, we got it eventually, but, you know, demos,
thank god.
Yeah,
Wombats did something similar actually, where on Christmas Eve they released an album of like 40 demos from the past like 15 years or something. We did the marketing for that at B-Hooks, and that was a really interesting concept. And I think that in itself, like, you listen to that and you're like, wow, you can really hear like the difference in their sound over the years.
Mm.
Like, completely.
Yeah, especially like, I always feel demos are a good way to like look at how a band, you know, like, work, because it's like either they've gone for a very stripped back version of a song so they've got a guideline, or they've gone, let's try and make the song, and then when we go into a studio we'll make it better. And then sometimes, like, you know, they've gone into studios to try and redo that and they just can't find the magic that, like, you know, the demo led to it, you know, sounding. So it's like, oh fuck it, then we just won't do this.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when I was in the band many moons ago, I remember when we signed to a little label, they wanted us to record the set live, because this was one of my early bands that was like a very very generic, like, cock rock band, like, very, like, blues influence. I very much wanted to be Guns N' Roses. Yeah, I was the drummer, and realistically, like, my timing was all over the place. Basically, we were crap. But the label, they wanted us to record the set live because it had that live feel, because, you know, it was rock and roll, which is another way of saying that, you know, we were all a bit sloppy.
If you tried to do it separately in a studio, like, it would just not work.
Exactly. So it was kind of more, we recorded it all live to see how it translated to record, to see how that then changed. Because some stuff works live that doesn't work on record, and vice versa. Obviously, of course, they're two completely different experiences. So that was an interesting learning curve in my sense. And yeah, I mean, that's a whole bigger conversation. The reason I'm bringing that up is just to show, like, learning, and I learned a lot of stuff from being in a band, which is why I think a lot of people in the music industry start in bands. So it's interesting to see, like, bands like Alex, and because I think Alex is going to make a really great songwriter producer as well. Not saying that he won't, you know, he's not a great artist. He is a great artist, but I think, you know, once the career in artistry, maybe if it settles down a little bit at some point for whatever reason between albums, I think he'll continue to be a great songwriter and producer for ages. Like, I've always wanted him to get him into writing sessions more, because he's great at that sort of thing.
Yeah. Going back to you and your DJ stuff as well, you know, like, what's your ultimate, you know, like, club night that you can do in the future? You know, like, what's a club night that exists that you want to do?
Oh, like an existing like club night
that
I would love to go and play at. I don't know if it's necessarily a club night, because I think I'm really fortunate to be somewhere like Propaganda.
Yeah.
Where
it's an event.
Yeah, it's growing again, which is awesome. I definitely want to do more international stuff. Like, I said earlier, there's some stuff that I'm ready to announce that's exciting, so that may or may not already be on the cards. But I want to go and just do more stuff in other countries. Like, obviously, like, oh, of course I want to go to do other countries, but just the idea of travelling a bit more and getting to see the world and that sort of thing is really exciting to me. And more festivals as well, because festivals are so fun. Like, when I did Reading last year, it was a good vibe because there were just so many people there who I knew, because everyone was there for the festival. I mean, you know, I think it was the night that Foo Fighters played, were headlining, so there were some cool people there, and that was a good time. So to answer the question, don't know about a specific club night, but definitely somewhere like Coachella or Primavera, or, you know, some, I know it's an obvious answer, but yeah, that's the obvious answer. Some big, cool international festivals is definitely the ideal.
Yeah, I went to a couple of post festival day, like, you know, DJ sets at Leeds, like, specifically as well after the Foo Fighters one, you know, like, and that was just such a fun, like, vibe, you know.
Well, festivals are just, it's an escape from real life, isn't it? You're in a field for 3 to 4 days, you have no phone signal, so the outside world doesn't exist. You know, for most people, you know, you're sleeping in a tent and sleeping in your own squalor for 3 days. Well, depending on how your own festival experience normally goes. It's just an escape from life. So I think being on the flip side of that and performing at that sort of thing is great as well. Because again, like the community within the music industry is exciting. Like we talked about it with Hang the DJ, but it exists all through the industry. Like when I'm playing shows, when I'm going like around the country and doing gigs and so on, I see the same bands everywhere because everyone's trying to do the same job. So it's the same sort of thing on a national level. And festivals are definitely the culmination of all of that because, you know, you get, rather than a 4-band bill, it's like, what, 100 bands, 150 bands. You're probably going to know a couple people on there.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll meet some new cool people as well.
So other than yourself, like, you know, who's like your favourite DJ that's out there?
You know what? This is really funny, actually, because I love a lot of EDM DJs. Like you said Skrillex earlier, like he's definitely up there. I love Steve Aoki. I love Diplo. And that sounds really weird because I don't really listen to EDM. I don't really listen to their music. But what they do and their ethos and the fact that, you know, none of them are just DJs. All of them have their own label. All of them kind of own their own festivals and they... all these various different things. And Diplo specifically, you know, he's got so many different projects. He does Diplo, he does Jack U, he does Thomas Wesley, which is his new like country project. He does Major Lazer, like so many different things. And that I love. And also the thing I love about Steve Aoki, it's a bit over the top, but I watched a documentary about him and it really changed my opinion of him. Number one, I didn't know he used to have a really cool punk indie label. Who signed Gossip and Block Party and so on.
Wow.
Didn't know that, which is pretty cool. But additionally, he plays like 500 shows a year, which if you do quick maths, that's more than one show a night. So he will play in like Ibiza, Paris and Las Vegas in one weekend. And he literally just sleeps on the plane. Like he has his own obviously private jet, which for environmental reasons I don't condone.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's constantly just flying around, seeing the world, playing these incredible shows, and he just sleeps on the plane, he sleeps in between and he's just constantly doing it. You know, that's a bit extreme. He's, you know, an absolute godsend to be able to do that, to have the mental capacity to go that far with it. But the reason I love those DJs is their ethic and like what they're doing within DJing and within music.
Yeah, obviously you said last night, you know, oh, why don't we do this every year? It's Hang the DJ 2021 on the cards.
Ruby, I was drunk when I said that. That is not saying no. That's not saying yes. I think last night was an incredible experience. I don't want to detract from that, from trying to milk the cow. You know, if we did it next year and the year after and the year after, it might get worse and worse, and I'd rather end with a high.
End with the high that was last night.
Exactly. But on the flip side, you know, it would be incredible to get together with everyone every year. So ask me in 2021, and then I'll give you an answer.
I'll have to get you on the podcast to announce it.
Let's do that. Deal. Well, I could also announce if it's not happening as well, which would be quite funny.
So I've got Liam Ward here, you know. Yeah. Hang the DJ 2021? Nah,
nope.
Fuck it.
End of podcast.
So, you know, whilst I've got you here, you know, is there anything else, you know, like you want to say, anything else you want to plug?
Plugging? No, I think I've done it all quite casually throughout the podcast, to be honest. Just, you know, just, I think the plug is always just keep an eye on everything I'm doing because I do all these different projects. It's cool if, you know, just to keep an eye on what I'm doing and become a part of it if you can do. I'm always looking to work with new people, any bands, any venues, everything. I'm always wanting to work with new people and you know, let's just have a party. And I just mean that generally, like the whole point of what I'm doing is to have a good time. I had a big chat with an old housemate of mine the other night and we were talking about the meaning of life and why we do things, and it got very deep. You know, we were talking about being cavemen and eating and hunting and having sex was basically the meaning of life back then, how that's developed in culture. But bottom line, the meaning of life is, you know, it's a journey to try and feel good internally and externally through various different things. And yeah, so let's just keep that journey going.
To plug it though, you know, like you obviously did mention during this, you have the LJW
House Party, 27th of March, Jaguar Shoes in Shoreditch, which is really cool because it's basically a shoe shop that it's in the basement of, in like underneath a train Bridge and Shoreditch. It's all, you know what I was talking about, these like really overly pretentious cool things. It's one of those. But that's gonna be a laugh. There's some cool people already coming down, so that's some good people coming down. There's some good people involved. I've managed to rope a few bands who some of them people will know the name of, like, which is cool, like, to get involved. And it's just, it's gonna be the same thing. It's keeping that ethos going. It's called the LJW House Party because it's gonna be a house party. Yeah, it's in a venue, but it's going to have the feel of a house party. Or at least it's meant to. I guess we'll find out. Yeah.
And, you know, if people want to find you online to, like, follow these kind of things, they go to...
At LMJWD on everything. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Not quite on TikTok or Triller or VK or Weibo or all of those crazy things quite yet, but who knows. Yeah, bit of a mouthful, but LMJWD.
I mean, I do love, you know, like, when you manage to get that branding across all of the social media.
Yeah. That's why I did it. I mean, I work in social media day to day, and it's one of those things that absolutely peeves me when someone's got, like, you know, Liam James Ward Music, Liam James Ward Official, like, on Twitter, and, you know, LJW1 on Instagram. It's, nah. It also looks messy on a poster. You just want the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram logos, and then at LMJWD next to it.
Like, the thing that pisses me off the most is the fact that, like, I can get Rubes on almost everything, but then there's Instagram, and it's Rube001, because someone who barely uses Instagram has at Rubes.
Yeah, so I actually, I really want the handle LJW, which I know is a big ask considering it's only three letters, but the Twitter user, LJW, if for some reason you hear this, reply to me. Because their bio is literally, I don't use this account anymore.
So why have they got it?
It's so annoying. This is a bit loserish to admit, but I have actually, like, written to Twitter to try and get it. But, we'll see.
We'll see.
So maybe by the time this podcast comes out...
Maybe.
All of this will be redundant. But no, I really doubt it. Let's stay true to LMJWD for now.
Mm. Anyway, you know, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and hopefully you manage to get home eventually.
Hopefully so. I mean, we were joking earlier, but I think I might actually just have to move back to Huddersfield and just live here. It might be easier than getting back to London. Mm. Right now, it feels like it anyway.
You're listening to Fresh from the Scene with Ruby Price.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Liam James Ward. There'll be links in the description to everything that he had to plug, every event that was going on. You know, you might have actually missed the opportunity to go to his house party event that he's putting on, but follow the host. You might see the next one. Don't forget to share it on social media if you did enjoy it. That would be really amazing, because social media algorithms and platform algorithms just sort of boost our chances of getting heard by other people who might enjoy this podcast. And, you know, that's a good thing, because people might want to hear this podcast. You know, they might be thinking, where the fuck is the music scene in Huddersfield? And if they listen to this, they might think, oh, there's the music scene in Huddersfield. Cool. Go and check out those bands. And obviously as well, if you want to come on the podcast, all you've got to do is send me a message. My email's in the description. My social media's in the description. And if you know me, you know, come up to me and be like, why haven't you asked me to be on your podcast yet? Granted, I do tend to get a bit bad at replying on social media these days. Anyway, on that note, I shall see you in the next podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you very much and goodbye.